Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, we're going to be talking about substitution of collateral. So, Jeff, what does that even mean? What's the term substitution of collateral for those who don't know?
So, in general, what it means is that when you create a note, you are using the collateral to secure that interest. And when we create financing, we use the collateral, the house or the land or whatever the asset may be, to secure the seller's interest. But when we pay them off, and sometimes we pay them off early, rather than do that, we'd like to move that note somewhere else so we can continue to use those proceeds. And I think it'll become much clearer as we go through this example.
Okay. So we have an example, and this is a house that you've talked about, I don't know, at the beginning of our podcast. I can't remember
how many. A couple times.
Yeah, I can't remember how many episodes ago. But what I'd like you to do is just go into that deal again.
Sure.
Tell us how you found it and tell us the terms you structured on it. And then we'll talk about what you've done now, because you've actually got the seller of that house to allow you to substitute the collateral or substitute the asset in order to use him as a money source on other deals.
Correct. So this is what we did. We found a house. It was for rent. So it wasn't even on the market in terms of being a sale. And that's something, you know, in Craigslist or in Utah, we have KSL or Rentler. It could be on Zillow. It doesn't matter. Wherever people are advertising. And so we called him and asked, hey, would you be interested in selling? And he said, yeah. So I love those kinds of leads because they're already used to getting cash flow each month.
Right.
And now if they're open to selling, we're basically giving them what they want, a sale and the cash flow. So
yeah.
This was an interesting one because free and clear always gives us the most flexibility to offer all kinds of different scenarios.
Absolutely.
But free and clear also presents some problems when it's been a rental, because when the seller sells, they're going to have a tax consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of sellers like to do some kind of 1031 exchange so they can
defer the taxes.
Yeah, defer the taxes.
The capital gains on it.
So owner financing allows them also to defer the taxes to some degree. It doesn't prevent taxes. They're still a taxable event. And even though they haven't received all their money, the taxable event occurs when we close.
Right.
So this is over a three-year term that we agreed to. And so they pay taxes based on money that they receive rather than a big lump sum all at once.
Yeah.
So that they can spread it out. It's not as big.
Yeah, it's more of an income than a capital event, I guess. So they're not getting a chunk of cash in their pocket is what I mean.
Right. But so this one was interesting just because he told us he wanted to do a 1031.
Yeah.
And we offered $415,000 for this house. Great area, super, A neighborhood.
Yeah.
Dated house, not terrible, but dated. And you could easily sell this house in the fours and low fives. But if you made it really nice, you could make it worth, you know, mid-sixes to maybe $700,000. So
yeah, which you guys did, right?
Yeah, we did.
Tricked it out.
So we offered him $415,000. We offered him a really low interest rate, and we're not going to go into how this all works because it's kind of complicated. But
no, it's you can find that in our past episode on it.
So yeah, we offered him like a 2.5% interest rate with a $2,000 a month payment with a 3-year balloon. And the way that it worked is that so we owed about and $21,000 down, and so we owed about somewhere in that range. And what our goal was, what we thought the exit strategy was going to be, is that we were going to do some minor repairs, and then we were going to sell it on a contract and take the spread in the middle. We'll chat more about that because that's one of my favorite strategies. But my partner convinced me otherwise. He was into rehabbing. He had just done a couple, and he thought that this would be a fun project. And we did it against my better judgment.
And, okay.
So it went on. We got lucky. We renovated it. We had some issues. We spent a lot of money, probably $160,000+.
Wow.
Yeah. And
it's a huge renovation project.
Yeah, but we sold it for $675,000, and we got lucky because we sold it right before the market starts to slow down. So we sold it in October, and I was thrilled to be done with that. But now we had a choice. So we're about 6-7 months into our term, and we have 2.5 years left to pay off the seller. And think about it from the seller's point of view too, that he agreed to this probably knowing I want to defer my taxes over, you know, 3 years.
Yeah.
He probably does not want to get cashed out early.
Right.
So we had a choice, and to me, the choice is always something if I'm paying someone off early, and that is, one, I could pay you off early, and you could get the chunk of your money, but, you know, you were due this much money in 3 years, whatever the balloon payment would be. I owe you this much right now. What would you be willing to take somewhere in the middle to get paid off now? So a discount.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, whatever discount that you ask for and are able to secure is like free money you just made.
Yeah.
So if I was able to get a $25,000 discount, it's like I made $25,000 more on this flip. But I really didn't think that the seller would want that. So we owed him the balloon payment as of the time that we were ready to close was around $385,000. Okay, so I told my partner, I want you to go back to him and say, so we can pay you off now. So we were bypassing the discount. You kind of have to make a choice of which route you want to go, and instead we said we can pay you off now, or we can just continue to make payments. Just as our agreement states, that money will sit in escrow until we find another property to secure it with. And meanwhile, whether it's secured or unsecured, we'll continue to make your payments. And in the end of 3 years, we'll pay you off. And so they went to lunch, they discussed it. And he's like, well, I'd like to see what you did to the house. I wanna see how it came out. So they went over there, and he was thoroughly impressed.
Right.
And he loved that. He liked what we do. So, and I think really what he wanted to know was, can I trust you guys to, hey, if my money's sitting there, now that, and you're going to use it, that you're going to use it in an appropriate manner.
Right.
So he felt good. He's like, yeah, I want to do that. So what that means for us now is that we have $385,000 cash at our disposal that we can use, really we can use in any way with his approval, but we can use for sure in anything that we can secure in first position that would be as good of protection for him as it was on the previous house. And that's debatable, right? Because to me, and probably to him, he certainly didn't think the property, I didn't think the property could be sold for $675 when we bought it. Prices, it just happened to be in this good pocket area, and I was thinking it was mid fives, and it turned out to be mid to high sixes. So,
yeah, that's quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, it was a lot of difference, and I probably looked at these numbers a number of times and had others do the same, and they all agreed, mid fives, mid to upper fives at first, and then I don't know what happened. Maybe we just didn't have good enough comps in that area, and then all of a sudden some came about, but that wasn't the plan. We did not really think that we were going to get $675 or in that $700,000 range.
Good for you. Good for you. That's awesome.
Well, the profit was fine for the flip. I think we would have made more going the route that I wanted to, where, you know, we did a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 rehab and then sold it on contract. I think we would have made more money. Uh-huh. But we now have access to $385,000 for $2,000 a month payment that we can use. And to be honest, what's probably going to happen? So if we use this money and we offer, so it's one thing if I go find a deal where we can use all of the money and it's still secured and he's fine. Nothing really changes. He's getting his payments. But we just got a deal right now where maybe we could spread out his money over the course of several properties and use them as down payments. So we'd have to secure him in like a second position, but offer him more return than he's getting. So, and he might be open to that. And what that does is that, hey, at the end of 3 years, if he likes what we've done, do you really think he's going to want his money?
No,
probably not. I mean, yeah. He doesn't need it, and he's going to have that tax consequence when he gets it. We've also talked about that he has more money that he would like to potentially look for a good return on investment. So, all of a sudden, this has become, you know, kind of a private money source for us.
Yeah.
When we bought his house. I mean, that was the goal, was to create the financing that would make sense so that we could buy the house.
Yeah.
And so he's got, but by the way, if you remember the example, he was asking 400. We offered him 415. He was asking $2,100 a month in rent. We're paying him 2,000. With the taxes and insurance, he's making more per month now.
Yeah.
And he did not. He had a bathroom that was gutted.
Yeah.
And he had all the supplies, all the materials, but he just really didn't want to do this. And so he didn't. And he doesn't have to anymore. So now he's the bank.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing is his money's just making money for him. So his money's working for him. He's no longer a landlord.
Right. No, now he's a banker.
Yeah.
So, and the interest rate we offered isn't huge, but interest rates aren't huge right now.
And it's
the
better
stock
than
markets, like all over the place and very risky.
And it's better than what he can get if it was just sitting in his bank account.
That's right. That's right. So now we have access to this, and we'll talk in the next episode about some of the. So I probably, going into this, I should have put something in the contract, in the agreement that we signed, that would allow us to do substitution of collateral. I did not. And you want to do it when there's a lot of equity or it's free and clear, because there's going to be a note. And to be honest, when I went into it, I thought we were going to use all 3 years. I didn't really think we were going to rehab this. But that should be a clause or not. I mean, that, as you see, it wasn't hard to work that out. And if I did put that in there, then I'm probably not going and getting a discount if that's what I wanted. So, and we'll talk about some of the other things that we can do. There's also partial releases where we could break this money up and use it. So $385,000 might not always work for every property. So right. What if I used $150 here and $200 there and, you know, whatever. So
Jeff, I want to dive in more to that deal. So you guys flipped the house. You guys sold the house. So where's the money? Did you give the money back to the seller? Where's the money?
It's a great question. What's happened in this particular case is that so the proceeds are sitting at the title company in their escrow account.
Okay, so the proceeds did not go back to the seller. So it's actually just sitting in escrow.
And what would happen, so let's say that we found a new deal where we wanted to use that money.
Okay.
So the seller would have to sign a new note, and we'd have to have a, it's not a closing per se, but it would when we buy it, so that he would be secured by that collateral, and then we would have access. Those funds would be used to purchase the property.
So it would be a new note and trust deed?
Yes.
Securing that property?
Yes, but the trust deed would be exactly the same. Or actually, I don't even know if it would need to be a note, because we already have the note in place.
Yeah, the note's in place.
It would just be a trust deed to secure it against that property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you would reference the note that he previously signed.
That's right.
Okay.
So here's the difference is that, so if I had put the substitution of collateral in the agreement to begin with, I'd probably put some language to the effect that buyer is able to substitute the collateral to a property that's as good, if not better, in terms of equity, and not need the seller's permission and or signature to do so.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have to get his approval to move it every time.
Now, I mean, it's not a big deal. He's already sold on it. I guess that it's a possibility that something could come up and he'd say, I really don't want you to do that, and it might put us in a tough spot. But I'm really not worried about it. He's really kind of sold on what we're doing. And remember, if he takes that money, he has that tax consequence. So that's how it works.
Okay.
I did not want him getting that money back. And to be honest, if he did, then he's going to have to pay all the taxes. That money is not his per se right now.
Okay. So, well, how does that work? Let's talk about that. So if he did want his money back, would the escrow require your guys' release on that?
Yeah. So if he wanted his money back, the first thing is we'd stop making payments and we'd recalculate how much we owe him. So right now, he can't get his money without us giving the payoff. We can't get his money without securing him with a new trustee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you guys still paying him that monthly payment of $2,000?
Yes.
So it's just like the term has continued, even though the property has sold.
Yes.
So it's kind of tricky here because you guys sold the property. The asset's no longer there, right?
Right.
So his money's just sitting in escrow, but the terms still remain the same. You're still making the same monthly payment.
Correct.
So you guys need to find a property
That's
to move
right.
it to
yeah.
real
we, we
fast.
We don't want that. We want to keep using that money. One, it's great terms for us, way better than any money that we could borrow from private or hard money.
Yeah, 2.5%.
But at the same time, we don't want it just sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah, because it's not working for you. It's certainly working for him.
That's right.
Even though it is a low interest rate. I mean, that's a phenomenal interest rate on money. So it's a great money source. So what are you going to do now? You're obviously looking for another property.
Yeah, and so one of the things, so we're primarily wholesalers, although we're not going to do another rehab like this one, but we don't mind doing a pretty straightforward rehab, you know, in and out in a couple weeks and put it back on the market. But one of the things that we'd love to do is wholetail. So, you know, find a property that maybe is just dated, just, you know, could use some updating. If we went in, cleaned it up a little bit, maybe nothing, maybe do zero to it. Can't quite buy it for the wholesale price, but can still get a good enough deal where you could then go back, put it on the MLS, and sell it and make a pretty nice profit not doing anything.
Right.
This would be ideal money for that because we can
put it quick.
We can buy the property cash. We've got the cash waiting, put it in, get paid, yep. Do it again. We want to keep using this money if possible. We want to in, out, if yeah. possible.
Yeah, so, you want to do as many transactions in this three-year term as possible.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, here's the worst-case scenario. Worst-case scenario. That we'll lend it out. So what we'll do is go find someone that's got a rehab, that needs hard money, and we'll lend it out at 2 points and 12% interest. And it'll be secured on the property as a first trust deed and note.
Yeah.
And we would make, let's say that we lent it all out. So we'd make $7,600 in points, the 2 points.
Uh-huh.
We'd get $3,800 a month. We're paying $2,000.
Yeah.
And it's not our money.
Yeah.
So not bad, right? I mean, that's our worst case scenario.
Yeah, you're just renting his money.
That's right. So that's our least favorite, but if it sits too long, that's what we'll look to do. So, or we could buy a rental and we at least know that we have money set aside for 2.5 years. But I want a better return on investment, and I think I can use the money, churn it more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Transactionally.
Yeah.
Churn it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about what you could do with substitution of collateral.
Well, actually, so we just talked about substitution of collateral. What I want to do is talk about, we talked about that you're able to discount a note too. So if you were to pay them off early, but the reason that we do creative financing is for a number of reasons. One is that it gets us into a property without any kind of conventional or hard money costs. And since you're dealing directly with the seller, an individual, everything's kind of negotiable. The term, the interest rate, the monthly payment, the down,
right.
All of it's negotiable. Good luck going and negotiating with Bank of America or Wells Fargo on the down payment or interest rate that they're offering, right?
Right.
Not happening.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's absolutely one of the huge advantages of creating financing with a seller. But there's some others. And so it might not be exactly substitution of collateral, but I want to talk about a couple of them. And
okay.
I think this is a good place to do so. So let me give you a quick example. So we wholesale a lot of these creative financing. So even though we negotiate the note, we're not the buyer.
Right.
And we're now passing that on to a new buyer and putting the seller and the buyer, they're having the agreement.
Right.
We get paid kind of in the middle and we're done.
Right.
Okay. So one of the things we always tell the seller is that if we're going to do this particular situation, you have another layer of protection. That's us. Because if you have any issue with the buyer, if the buyer was to default, stop making payments, you know, that becomes some kind of issue, call us. We'll get back involved. Well, people wonder, why would we want to do that? Well, let me show you an example. We did not get back involved, but I'll show you why we would want to.
Okay.
So we sold a house. This was a house in Idaho, like 2.5 years ago, maybe. And little house, it had been listed. It wasn't selling. We contacted him. I have no idea. I don't remember how. It's like a 3-bedroom, 1-bath kind of deal. $115,000 or something like that. I think we bought it. I think we put it under. It was probably worth $135,000.
Uh-huh.
That's my guess. $135,000, $140,000 back then. But we bought it for like $116,000. When I say we bought it, we didn't buy it. We contracted to buy it. told him we're not going to be the buyer. We're going to go try to find that buyer. We offered him $7,000 down. I don't remember what the interest rate, but it was probably more amortized, you know, 4%, 4.5%, something like that. Whatever his payment was, and then a 3-year balloon. Okay. Pretty standard stuff. We actually found a buyer that had just inherited a trust. So he had $40,000 to put down. I think it was even more because we got paid whatever it was that we got paid. And the seller ended up with, instead of seven, $33,000.
Okay.
So I had to go back to him because anytime that it deviates, that what we can get from our buyer deviates from what we have an agreement with the seller, we've got to go make sure that's still going to work for them. Maybe they don't want all that money down. Maybe the numbers won't work quite the same way. So I went back to him. I said, hey, what if I could bring you $33,000 instead of $7,000? He's like, what? And I said, but we have a buyer. That's how much he would like to put down. This is how the terms would change. But I've got to be upfront with you. I've done some research. And by the way, anytime that you're buying a house and you're selling it to someone else, you should do a couple of things. And that is, you should, and we should have an episode about this, but got to do a little research, like some credit checks, stuff like that.
Okay.
So I did a credit check. His credit was awful. I mean, like barely 500, if I remember correctly. Wow. And it wasn't like one issue. It's been chronic issues for many years.
Okay.
Okay. So I told the seller that. I'm like, the chances are of him following through are not very good.
Right.
He's like, I don't care. I'm like, I'm getting all my equity out. And if I have to take back the property, then I'll take back the property. I'm like, as long as you understand the risk and that you realize if you have a problem, come back to us. He's like, great. So over the last 2 years, he emails me every so often. The guy's not paying on time. He's always late. And I kept reminding him. I'm like, you do remember that? I tried to tell you this, right? And yeah, so maybe 2 months ago, he called me. And he's like, so what can I do? He's always late. He's already moved out of the property. He moved in there with his girlfriend who was pregnant. They've split up. She's gone. He's moved out. He tried to rent it to someone else, a buddy of his. That didn't work. He's out. He's renting it to someone else. And the lady actually contacted the actual owner, you know,
the tenant,
the node holder.
Okay.
And the owner I dealt with, and said that he's kind of ripping her off because he took some deposit money from her and wasn't giving her what, you know, he had stuff in there still. And so it's obvious that this guy's had some hard times.
Yeah.
There may be some drug issues involved. I don't know, but his life's falling apart, right? Whatever trust money he had is gone. And if he's already moved out of this house, I mean, the payment was like $500 a month.
Yeah.
He wasn't finding anything really cheaper than that. So if you can't afford this and you've moved out, then you've got a problem.
Right.
So he's been chronically late, and I'm like, you can't do anything other than enforce the late fee. You can't kick him out for being late. And when I say late, it's like a week or 10 days. It's not like a month. And so he's getting a little frustrated because he's got to make the mortgage payment, you know, the underlying mortgage payment out of his pocket. And then he's got to track down this guy every month to try to pull the money out from him.
Okay.
So he's like, what are my options? So this is the part that I wanted to talk about. So if he was in default, the options are, hey, tell the guy, the new owner, sell the property, right? And he bought it for somewhat of a discount. There's some equity there. Most people don't even realize that they're able to sell the property.
Right.
He's like, I don't want to tell the guy that. And I'm like, all right, well, that's up to you. but certainly he could go and sell the property and he could get cashed out and he'd be done with this whole thing, right?
Right.
Second, if he was in default, you could foreclose, or depending on where you're at, you could go through the forfeiture process, take that property back, and you would get it with all the equity that's still, you know, he paid $40,000. The seller would be in super good shape where he's at now, right?
Right.
You could go offer this guy some money to give back the deed.
Right.
In this case, it was like a contract for deed, so the deed was held in escrow. But to give back his right of ownership to the seller.
Right.
So that's what I said. Sounds like he's hurting for money. Why don't you go offer him some money to give back the house?
Yeah.
He put down 40, and he's like, how much would you offer? And I said 7 or 8. He offered 5. The guy took it. So now he's got the house back. He's no longer got to deal with this guy. That guy, probably $5,000 is probably
gone.
It probably is gone, but at the time was like a huge, you know, saving grace. But, yeah. And it's too bad. I literally told the seller, it's like, why don't you just tell him to go sell the house? You know, go get a realtor, let him sell the house for him. And whatever money he gets is fine, but you'll get cashed out. He didn't want to do that. So here he wasn't even in default, but you could kind of see where it was going.
Yeah.
It wasn't going in the right direction.
Yeah, it was just going to get messier.
Yeah. So literally what he did was able to go and buy back the house for pennies on what this guy paid him.
Right.
Avoided any kind of
legal,
foreclosure nor forfeiture, because that's where it was going. Plus, he had a tenant in there that was not happy already, so this whole thing was about to kind of get messy.
Yeah,
and now he ended up back with the property. Now, I offered. I said, "I'll just take over your position on the note. Okay, I'll clear it all up. I'll fix it. I'll make sure your payments are paid on time and." At the end of the balloon, I'll cash you out. Why would I want to do that?
So that you can collect another paycheck.
Well, I get to take where he is. I mean, he just was willing to pay $5,000 to get to that point. I was willing to do it with not paying any money.
Yeah,
if he just wanted done with the headache, I would have been happy. And then I probably would have gone and offered him some money. Or I would have gone and said, hey, go sell the house or I'm going to go sell the house and I'll split the proceeds with something. Yep.
Right.
Whatever. I would have gone and worked out a deal. But what's worst case scenario? So I'll deal with this headache until I've got to get rid of him. And then I'll take the property where it's at, which is $40,000 less than what I sold it. Plus, it's appreciated and it was worth more to begin with. So there's probably $75,000 in equity in it. I'm happy to take that position and save the seller this headache. So,
right.
But the seller realized that, no, I'd rather keep this headache a little longer. So, but does that make sense? I mean, these are some of the options. So you have substitution of collateral. You have, and you know, we talked briefly earlier about, hey, and now we have this lump sum. You know, how can I maybe use pieces of it for different projects? Well, in this case, I just got to clear it with the seller.
Right.
You could actually put a clause in that, hey, I can use this as long as, and I can use it in any way, secured as a first trust deed and note or a first mortgage on the property, as long as, you know, we've got this much equity or as good, if not better, than what we had prior.
Right.
You've got the foreclosure and forfeiture process in case there's a default, forfeiture being much quicker. And depending where you're at, I mean, the foreclosure process may be 30 or 60 days, or it may be longer than 4 months. So
right.
That's certainly something you want to take into account. We can discount the note if we're paying them off early. And if something is gone wrong and we've wholesaled it, or what if I own this property and he was my, I was the bank. Could I just go and say, I see what's going on here and I don't want to have to, I'm going to have to enforce all these late fees and you're going to have to pay me all this money and it doesn't seem like this is going in the right direction. What if I just paid you to, you know, give back the property. You don't have to deal with it anymore, and you can be on your way.
Yeah.
There's all these options. That's why I love creative financing, because, you know, if this was a bank loan, what do?
You default.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, they keep adding on those late fees, and ultimately when you default, it's like, pay us all of it, or you're done, and we're going to foreclose on you.
Yep.
Here, I've got all these different options, and it's awesome.
Opened up, yeah. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. And you really do. It's amazing how many exit strategies you have with a property when you line up creative financing and you structure it right to begin with.
Now, it doesn't work on every deal, so let's be clear about that. Now, there's no note or bunch of cash to get when you take over a $150,000 note and you bought the property for $160,000. There's no note to discount necessarily, or substitution of collateral.
Right.
So it works great when it's free and clear and you're paying off early, or there's a lot of equity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, cool. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate your ear. Pass this on if you haven't already. If you got friends or family that's interested in real estate, specifically creative financing, we'd love to reach those people. we do this out of kind of the kindness of our hearts, and it does cost us money. And, you know, we're definitely using our own time here, which, you know, is highly valued, right? So we would just appreciate your guys' feedback, and, you know, leave us a review, especially if you like the show. You guys can reach us. We have a hotline at 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. We set that up so you guys can ask questions or leave us comments on that. And, you know, if we really like the question or comment, we'll put it on the show. You can also reach us at www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Again, thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Jeff, any last words?
Oh, I would love to know what we can do to help further people's education. That's really what the hotline's for. Yeah, I'm thrilled if you bring us deals that you want to analyze, but questions that maybe, you know, I missed that, but don't ask all these questions if you decided to skip from episode 1 to episode 23 and, you know, we've covered it. I'm not going to go over them again unless we actually have to.
Right, right. Cool. All right, guys. Until next time, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.